This is Virginia Oliver, audiovisual supervisor at Freed Hardeman College, who is going to interview C.P. Rowland, a longtime teacher, preacher, and elder. The interview is taking place on May the 17th, 1977, at 10 a.m. in the Loden Daniel Library Conference Room of the college in Henderson, Tennessee. This is for the library's Freed Hardeman College Oral History Program. Good morning, Brother Rowland.
Morning, Sister Oliver.
We are going to start with the years before Freed Hardeman College. Would you give your name in full and give the date and place of your birth?
I am Clifford Paul Rowland. I was born in Esser Springs, Tennessee, July 4, 1893. And Esser Springs is about 1 mile north of the Tennessee-Mississippi line, and in the southeastern end of Hardeman County, Tennessee. It is the place where Brother A.G. Freed came in 1889 and established a school.
Fine. Now then, start with your parents. Give us some information about your parents.
My father's name was Isaac Newton Rowland. His father's name was the same. And he has thought that because of the placing of the name Newton in the Rowland name in this country, that his forebears must have had an educational interest and appreciation of leaders in the field of education. My mother's name was Mary Margaret Nelms. She was a member of a North Mississippi family, slave-owning and plantation-owning, in just across the Tennessee-Mississippi line, living in Mississippi. There was a rather large community of Nelms people who settled in that area and in the southern part of Tennessee. This family was very much connected with Brother A.G. Freed, bringing him from Valparaiso, Indiana, down south to start a school at Esser Springs, Tennessee. And she and my father both attended the first session of school that Brother A.G. Freed taught in the community. My childhood was spent in that area. My father was a teacher and also a farmer, since the school system at that time had only about three or four months of public education, or that is free from support by any of the parents on public funds. And my father was a teacher that number of months, and occasionally added 2 or 3 months of a subscription nature by the families to extend the school to 6 months or more. And I attended school and helped work about the plant, keeping the building, so forth. I also had a full life in regard to agriculture, because early in our family, my father bought some farms in the area and carried on a farming operation. And in this farming operation, I had the usual experience as I grew up of the time in the way of keeping the crops free from weeds, called hoeing in most instances. I learned to plow, handle stock, also work with other people on the farm, fencing, making boards for the buildings, things of that kind. My father always gave us some time off each week, at least a half a day, sometimes more, that we could fish or hunt or do the kind of things that boys like to do as they grow up. And I had a full life in that area fishing, hunting, and playing ball, and carrying on that kind. I participated in all such sports in the community. I became a member of the church at an early age. The Dunn brothers from Nashville, Middle Tennessee, came into the area preaching. They were very wonderful Bible scholars, all of them, and three different ones of the number came to Esther Springs for meetings and also to Pocahontas, a nearby railroad station, and the station which afforded that kind of transportation, because traveling in wagons and buggies, horseback, and over the railroad were the means of transportation at the time. So I heard Brother Gus Dunn, usually spoken of as G.A. Dunn, as separated from the two other brothers who came into the community, one of which was Jim Dunn, and the other, his brother, that came also into that community. I was baptized in Hatchie River by Brother G.A. Dunn when I was 12 years old, in a baptizing place commonly used only about 100 yards from the spring which gave the community its name, which was owned, the land around it, by the Essery family, a family which had been in that territory back from colonial days, considerable while before the Civil War. And they owned the land and opened up this particular mineral water spring to people who came into that area from Memphis and from various places round about within a reach of 100 miles or more for rest and to drink the water, which was supposed to have some medical qualities, the mineral water that could be had there. And so that is the early area of my childhood.
Now, going to your schooling, I think you mentioned to me that you did not go to high school. Tell us about your schooling that would be comparable to the high school.
When I grew up, we did not have the high school form of education as it is today. There were very few schools known as high schools in that particular sense of a four-year course at the time. The school system was divided into two parts that corresponded. One was the elementary school, which consisted of the first eight grades, and the other was a secondary school, which usually consisted of about 2 years above the elementary school, but covered very much and very well, due to the system of education at the time, what is offered in a four-year high school today. Such subjects as rhetoric, as it was known then, and as algebra, geometry, and literature, and history other than the history of the United States was also offered in this course, but not very much science. Most of the schools were rather weak in science, and practically none of them had any laboratories at the time. So my schooling was done in an elementary school at Esther Springs and in secondary school, which brought me up to where they would accept me into the colleges. And I came from the secondary school there in the year 1910, from Esther Springs up to the National Teachers Normal and Business College here in Henderson, Tennessee, which had been started in 1908. And so that was my preparation for college.
That's fine. Now then, who really influenced you to come to the college other than you?
Well, my parents would be the first influence, because I was, speak of it sometimes as being predestined to attend Fried Hartman College. My father had always been interested in schools where the Bible was in the curriculum, And the Nelms family, my mother's family, was the family that brought Brother A.G. Freed from Valparaiso, Indiana, down south to the Esser Springs community. A cousin of my mother's, D.S. Nelms, who worked with Brother Freed in the school, and a number of my mother's uncles and her father helped build the buildings, the administration building and a girls' dormitory building, boarding place in that school. And so I was rather predestined to attend the school because they respected Brother Freed very much as an educator. And he left Esser Springs and came to Henderson. They would be the major influences. Brother N.B. Hardiman came to Esser Springs and delivered an address to the school there, which was customary at that time in such schools when they had a graduating day and program. And my father invited him to come and be the speakers about 2 years before the school opened here in Henderson, Tennessee. And when Brother Hardiman came for the address, he had a blueprint of this building in which we are now, the old administration building and the first building of the school here at this particular place, had it with him. And many people came from surrounding communities and areas to hear him that day and to learn of the plans that he and Brother Freed were making to open another school in Henderson, Tennessee. And so I had that acquaintance with him. In fact, I had the opportunity to go to bring him from Pocahontas, Tennessee, to Esser Springs because there was no taxes or no regular transportation to bring people. And I developed the practice of using our equipment, horse and buggy and surrey and other things of that kind, to transport people from Pocahontas, Tennessee, out to Esser Springs, Tennessee. And so I became personally acquainted with Brother Hardiman, heard him speak, and he was working in the interest of the school here at Henderson at the time.
Now, we'll take the years that you were at Freed Hardiman, and what were the years that you attended?
I came here in the fall of 1910, and I think it might be interesting to learn the method used at the time to reach Henderson and the school. We had no bus transportation, and very few people could get here by their own transportation as day students. So the railroad was practically the only means of transportation. So Corinth, Mississippi, on the Southern Railroad, the first railroad built in the South from Memphis to Charleston, even before the Civil War, and Jackson, Tennessee, which had the lines running not only north and south, but east and west at the time, these two centers became centers where students bound for Henderson came by train. There were about four different trains, two north and two south, one in the morning and the other in the evening, going through Henderson, bringing students. And often there was practically a train load at that time. And this continued on for about 20 years following the time I came here to go to school. I came from Pocahontas to Corinth, Mississippi, and changed there from the Southern to what was known as the GM&O Railroad that came through Henderson about 4:30 in the afternoon and came to Henderson by that kind of transportation. The first year I was here, I did not, of course, stay in the dormitory. All the students, men and women, and girls and boys, stayed in the homes of Henderson. A great percentage of the homes were boarding homes, people who had moved here to bring their children for the college advantages, and they cooperated then and used as a means of aid to them to keep them in their homes where they took their meals as well as had a room. I stayed in the home of a Dr. Marsh, who came here from Walnut, Mississippi, well known in the area as one of the very fine physicians of that day and time. His wife was a half aunt of my mother. She was a Nelm, and my parents arranged for me to stay with them throughout the session and be in their home. And so that was my first staying place. The place where they lived was the place where the new bank, the Chester County Bank, now is. And the old house stood there, a two-story building, until very recent years, and occupied a part of the ground where that bank is now, west of the overpass of the railroad. The buildings at that time, boarding places, did not have electric lights. Other kind of lights had to be used. They did not have central heating systems. We had a coal grate in our room, and three of us stayed in that room. That was rather customary. And that was a kind of fire. And as I like to do more of my study early in the morning and never could stay up very late at night, then it was my lot usually, and we worked out a system of helping each other that way, to get up and shake the grate out and put the kindling in and start the fire and get the room warm. The other two men who stayed with me, one, Brother F.E. Howell, who was one of the first men to attend the National Teachers Normal Business College the first year it opened, and made a number of trips back here, and Bob McCoy from Walnut, Mississippi, were my roommates that year, and we really enjoyed each other and remained friends then throughout life till they both died. And I have had the good fortune, in some senses, to be able to have good health and continue my work with the college up to this day.
What about the city? Give a picture of that.
Well, the city of Henderson, as already mentioned, did not have the electric lighting and a plant of that kind of time. It was built by some Freed Hardeman students who put in the system for the city. I understand, I've been told by Brother E.D. Briggins, whose family had come here, Brother L.L. Briggins, his brother, to attend the Georgia Robinson Christian College when it was operating, that there had been some electric service in Henderson before that date, but these two Freed Hardeman students put in the first city system and offered a lighting advantage pretty well throughout the entire city of Henderson at the time. They did have a good system of walks, which was rather remarkable to all of us country boys, that they had such a good system of concrete walks throughout the small village at that day, and they've remained even until now. Many of the old walks along the streets had been built back in the early 1900s and were excellent and quite different from most places the size of Henderson at the time.
Did they have the concrete streets also?
No, they did not have concrete streets. They did not have gravel or any form of street. Simply the original 1910 to sometime afterward, the original dirt streets remain. And in the winter time, when there would be continued rain and freezing, then driving the streets would take often a horse almost up to his knees in places. And the groceries were delivered by about three different stores that developed, because it took quite a bit of grocery sales to meet the need of the families, feeding the about 400 students in all that were here. Not all were boarding students, of course, some were local. But these groceries were delivered by hack, regular form of grocery hacks, and that continued not only during the time I was here in college from 1910 to 1913, but even up to the time that I returned in 1921 as a teacher considerably after that time, these grocery hacks ran in the dirt streets and mud and mire, as said before, rather difficult even for a horse, as they were horse-drawn. And so the grocerymen delivered regularly to the homes here, beginning with these schools.
Now let's start back with the college itself. Who was the president?
Brother A.G. Freed was the first president of the college when it began in this building, the administration building that had been built by him and Brother Hardeman as private property. After the National Teachers Normal, as an era in respect to that, after the Georgia Robinson School closed in 1907, then the friends of Brother Freed and Hardeman wanted a school of that kind with Bible in the curriculum to continue, and with the Christian influences surrounding such a school. They wanted the school to continue in Henderson, since one had been operating here from a few years after the Civil War. And so Brother A.G. Freed was brought back from Texas, where he did 2 years of teaching during the interim between the time the Georgia Robinson Christian School closed and this one opened in 1908. He was brought back from Texas by Brother N.B. Hardeman and other friends here in the city of Henderson, who had had a mass meeting and decided to invite Brother Freed to come back and to join with Brother Hardeman in building another school. So they erected this building in 1907 and 8, having it ready for the 1908 session, at a cost of $30,000, and owned it as a piece of private property until 1919, when it was went under the direction of a board of directors, and has been operated in that way from then until now. And so this building, with a school opening in it, with Bible in its curriculum, was the one that I attended during those years. And the course at that time was different from courses now. They operated on the normal school plan, and that was a special form of education developed throughout much of the United States at the time, and it was a form known in Indiana, normal school. It was to shorten the school period for the students and enable them to make faster progress. It did not hold a student for 4 full years, regardless of how well he did his work, how thorough he was, or what natural abilities he had. They felt like that he should be able to complete sooner if he could do the work, the course. And so they planned the course more practical in its nature and allowed him to make faster progress, and thus they developed a type of school called the normal school, usually having the features in the Christian colleges of Bible in the curriculum, of a business course, and of a teacher's course. And that was the most customary form at the time.
Describe this administration building as you came into it. Let us see a picture, of it.
I did not get your question, sister.
The administration building, when you attended here, give us a mental picture of it as you come in the front main entrance.
Well, the administration building, the front, of course, had around it, the building had around it, some very wonderful oaks, quite a number of them, ranging up in the area of about a dozen. And the main entrance is made on Main Street and is still the principal entrance in a way to this particular building. It was a two-story building with exceptionally thick walls, some 18 to 24 inches of bricks made here in the community. And many people have lived under recent times or had a part and thought of it as having a part in a very wonderful work in even hauling in wheelbarrow the materials and the bricks that went into this building. It was a two-story building with very high ceilings, and it was heated by hot air that came through vents from coal as the fuel. And there were vents in all the different rooms coming into the room that heated the building. The ceilings were high, and the lighting was the usual form that time, not electric lights. I do not think they had gas lights at the time, and therefore different forms of kerosene lighting at that particular day and time. The auditorium, which is still in use in good condition, was built to seat about 400 pupils. The library was in the southeastern downstairs room of the building, the room that later came to be known as the Bible Room, as Brother Hardeman refixed it and seated it for the purpose of teaching Bible in that room. And that room was where the library was. It had glass stacked cases, glass front, and about six or eight of them with the books. And although it was not handled as a library is today, with a librarian and assistants, those of us who came here found it to be quite a supplement and offer great opportunity, because books had been scarce with all of us, and we'd been unable to have much reading material other than text. And for that reason, all of us students at the time that were interested really in learning and in education used such books as series of books in history and others. And I developed a taste for by reading the biographies of great men, series of that kind, for history in particular, and later made it one of my majors in a graduate course. I think it started here in the one-room library of Freed Hardeman College at that particular time.
That's wonderful. Do you recall how many classrooms they had?
They had about six regular classrooms at that particular time, because certain sections of the building were devoted to more specialized work, this being the only building that was in use as an administrative building. The classrooms were all rather large also. They were made so they would seat something like 100 pupils, a number of them. And in addition to the upper students in the different departments, on the first floor, two of the rooms were devoted to the elementary department. A teacher was provided for the early grades in the elementary department, and one also for the upper grades. And most of the time, two different teachers used those rooms that lead out toward the west part of the building where the first dormitory was constructed and is now known as the Hall Rowland building. The classrooms did not have many teacher's aides in them. Maps were in general use in history, but none of the modern teacher's aides were in use. The teachers taught from topical outlines. Most of the outlines they wrote themselves and had them in use. Methods used at the time required the class to do considerable work in home study in preparation, and the students expected to do at least 1 hour or more work for each hour of recitation. I do not recall any other special uses except the room that Brother Freed used for his penmanship room. It is the room where the historical materials is now kept. And when the building was built, it was designated as the penmanship room. Brother Hardeman taught classes in that room, and Brother Freed. Brother Freed usually conducted not only his penmanship class and drills for 30 minutes each with the group that assembled there, but he taught Bible classes in that room at that particular time. And Brother Hardeman also used it at the time for a number of his classes.
Tell us about the music room.
The building was equipped with music rooms. The entire east end of the building downstairs was where the music department was located. Ms. N.B. Hardeman was in charge of the music department, head of it at that time, and had two assistants. And that made a necessity for three particular rooms in that part of the building. Around the building, on different sides, there were small rooms where pianos were placed for the students who were taking piano under Ms. Hardeman to do their practice work. And these rooms are still where they can be identified, although they've been put to such uses as secretaries and places of work for them. There are a number, both downstairs and upstairs, on the first floor, and a few off the auditorium on the second floor. Music was one of the outstanding features. A very large proportion of the girl students, or women at the time, took piano under Mrs. Hardeman. Band work and that type of music was not featured very much, did not have any special instructor in that kind of music. So Ms. Hardeman had a large class, and the equipment was good, and most of the homes had pianos in them where women were boarding so that they could do practice work there. And in going about over Henderson, you heard people practicing, and thus quite a bit of piano music could be heard even out on the street, because at the time the windows were open and the buildings were accessible, so that the music became an outstanding feature in the school. And Ms. Hardeman was a very splendid, wonderful instructor who left a fine impression in all of her work in the early days of the college.
Now then, we've talked about those buildings and things, and you've spoken a little about the courses and that you took, you know, while you were here. Do you have anything else further that you'd like to tell us about the field of study that you went into?
Well, I did not come with any particular decision as to what my major study would be. So I chose a general education course consisting of languages, both Latin and Greek, and history, literature, not very much study in sciences, because they did not have laboratories to offer a complete work in science, and I did not study a great quantity of Bible. I later regretted the fact that I did not take the opportunity of taking more Bible courses, because at that time it was not my intention to go into the ministry or public proclamation of the gospel. But if I had any particular things in mind, I would say at the time it would either have been teaching or medicine. But as time went on, I decided more and more in favor of teaching, and so by the end of my three-year stay here in Henderson, I began to take some of the special education courses which were beginning to be offered about that time. They offered them under the name of reading circle courses. They did not have the organized form of psychology and methods and various courses of that kind then, and were just beginning to emphasize that kind of work for teachers, because up to that time it had been generally thought that knowing the subject real well, being thorough in the knowledge of the subject, was much more important than methods. And the general impression was that the methods courses were simply rather light in a way, and that they did not furnish the teacher with very much practical material, and that lasted for quite a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
Also, so that is the reason that toward the end of my 3 years here, I had decided that I would devote my life more to teaching than any other profession. And I might follow up at this particular point on that by saying that as a result of that, that I obtained a place teaching east of Henderson at Sardis in Henderson County, and taught there in what would be called a junior high school now, in high school work, having what would be known today as the 9th and 10th grades. Of course, all such schools also included the elementary division that led up to those grades. And after that, I decided to attend the West Tennessee Teachers College, as it was known, which was at Memphis, Tennessee, a junior college, and there continue my education, and later in Union University, taking other courses in educational methods and so forth.
Now, who were some of the teachers while you were here in college, while you were here as a student?
While I was here, I had classes under Brother Freed. Most of the Bible work I did was under Brother Freed. Brother L.L. Briggins, who taught literature and language, particularly Greek. Brother W.H. Owen, who was a great man in mathematics, well-learned in high mathematics. And Brother Hardiman, who taught some mathematics at the particular time, but I did not have very many classes under him while I was here in school. I believe this covers tolerably well the different teachers under whom I had courses. I would name one who was a classmate of mine who lived here in Henderson that was employed by Brethren Freed and Hardiman to teach the last year I was here. He was my classmate in a number of courses during the first few years, and that is Raymond Butler. He had done his course so well that he was employed to teach the last year, and I had some history courses under him, who had formerly been a classmate of mine.
What about some other classmates? Do you recall some of the students that were here at the time you were?
Yes, I'm very happy and think in a most respectful and honorable way of quite a number of my classmates at the time. I'll begin with some who have remained here in Henderson. Annie Travis, as she was known at the time, who became a Mrs. Davidson, spent the greater part of her life and up to retirement in the Chester County High School here in Henderson, and has been known to be one of the great teachers of this particular area. I also, in thinking over my classmates, recall the one just mentioned, Raymond Butler, another, Jack Kellum. He became a doctor. He and Raymond Butler went to Ole Miss from Henderson. After they'd finished their course here, same one that I took, known as the scientific course at that particular time, then they decided to go on in special work, and Dr. Kellum to do his work in medicine. When they went to the Ole Miss, they did not accept students from such colleges directly on their transcripts, as later they were after we became a member of the Tennessee College Association in 1925, and had all such students to take an examination. There were three of them. The third I do not recall at this particular time, but two of these three told them that if they didn't make a grade as high as the upper grades made of those who came out of standard institutions, then they would not press further their desire to enter the university. So they took the examination, and all three of them were admitted because they made such good grades in the upper part. And for quite a long time, although I never did see this officially published, I heard it said a number of times by those that I think knew that Raymond Butler made the highest grade on examination of any student up to that time.
That's wonderful.
So they accepted them without any further question into Ole Miss down at Oxford, Mississippi, where they continued their education. Another that I think of, a Henderson man and the family, great supporters of Freed Hardeman College, was the Mitchell family. The particular one of them that was my classmate was Dave Mitchell, D.E. Mitchell, who continued to live in Henderson, who studied law, and came back and became a practicer with a local attorney here in Henderson. And finally, before his death, he became the official attorney for Freed Hardeman College and rendered many great services to the college throughout his lifetime. He also was a deacon in the church at Henderson a number of years, and a great successful businessman from many points of view. So I've always prized most highly my early associations with him, since we remain especially personal friends and traveled together in different connections, and he was so interested in the college up to the time of his death. I also had as roommates in 1913 two men who became great in their work. They were Tom and Adla Croon. They were brothers. Tom was already a preacher of the gospel when he came to Henderson for further Bible study, and Adlai, his brother, who was some younger, also made a record in the upper 10% always of his class. Brother Tom Croom spent his life as a minister in Arkansas, and Adlai has been connected with different ones of the colleges in Arkansas from the very beginning of it on down to the present administration. Another one that I would give special mention to was J.D. MacFarlane. Brother MacFarlane went to Murfreesboro, Tennessee, because his home was near there, and established a great business. It is now being carried on by others of the family, and lived his days out there. A successful businessman, and often came back on a visit to Freed Hardeman College. Another one of the ones that I would mention is Conley Sanford, whose home was in West Tennessee, Dyer, Tennessee. He went to Valparaiso, Indiana, after graduating here in 1913, and continued his education. He was taking a pre-medical course And after he got to Valparaiso, we continued to correspond some. And I recall a card he wrote me saying that he found his courses to be embedded somewhat in a hotbed of infidelity. I take it he had reference to some of the science courses that they were offering there at that time. He continued his education there and followed that by taking his doctor's degree in Memphis, the medical school there. He became one of the great physicians of West Tennessee. Continued practicing until he established a special diagnostic reputation and pursued that with being promoted to various important and honorary positions in the medical profession until the end of his life, which was just a few years ago. All these, my classmates, fill important places. I recall one other unique one, Damon Smith, who also was from West Tennessee. Her father was a doctor, and she decided she wanted to take a doctor's course. At that time, there were very few women who were allowed to enter the medical school to prepare for becoming a physician. In fact, I might inject here a thing that I think would be of some interest, that years later, when we had another girl from West Tennessee who wanted to take a medical course and make a doctor, her parents and I went to Memphis to visit with Dr. Hyman, who was dean of the medical school at that time, and spent almost an entire day with him. But he dissuaded the parents and gave a number of reasons why at the time he thought it quite unsuitable for a girl to take a medical course and expect to compete with men in the medical profession. And this kept her from being able, after she had graduated here at Free Government College, to continue her medical education. But Damon Smith was accepted, probably doubtless because her father was a well-known physician in West Tennessee, and where they had that kind of a background, then that gave them some advantage, medical school's consideration. She was accepted, she continued, and finished her course there, and married another one of the young men, and they moved to Union City, Tennessee, and established a clinic, and that bears their name in Union City until this day. I believe this completes Caldwell. Of course, it is not all, because there were quite a number of others who are even worthy of mention, but time would forbid my continuing any longer in this particular line in order that we may get to the next events.
All right. What about some incidents or happenings that happened while you were here in school?
Well, of course, there were a number of different sorts and kinds. One incident that I might mention was that due to the limited features of recreation and entertainment, we men and boys often in the afternoons took a walk on the railroad, making sometimes as much as 2 or more miles, in which we used mostly the ties, cross ties, to step on them as we took this exercise and enjoyed the countryside and walking with one another. And during the time I was here, one of the ones who became a great man in the history of Free Government College, Brother H.T. Dawkins, was in college, and he was one of my classmates also. And he was walking, but the afternoon train overtook them somewhat sooner than they expected, and he started to beat it across a trestle and was hit by it. And that became quite famous. Of course, he was crippled up considerably, but he survived it and has had a wonderful and successful life in Memphis in business, and been a great man in the board of Freed Hardeman College for many years, probably around 30 years. That is one of the things of interest, well known to all students at the time. Another happening during the time I was here was an outstanding hailstorm. There comes across West Tennessee occasionally one in which the hail is as large as an ordinary golf ball, or even sometimes they claim as large as a baseball, and does great damage. This happened during that brief span of years, 1910 to 1913, and as I recall, there were quite a number of windows in the college building destroyed by that hail, and much damage was done here in the city of Henderson. Since the hail was so large and such wind-driven force given to it. During my last year here, the Hardeman Hardware store, which was adjoining the campus, only one building was between it here in the corner of this particular part of the business of Henderson, on just south of Main Street and opposite from Court House and Court Square, burned. The fire took place early in the morning. As I recall, about 3 o'clock in the morning it began. And it involved a number of other buildings. The courthouse was in great jeopardy, and much of the materials in it and other nearby buildings were moved out of them that the fire department felt it'd be unsafe for them to try to save it. I might also mention that the fire department at that time was a group of volunteer men, and that the water supply was by drawing water from the nearby wells, that there was no regular equipment of any kind to keep fire from spreading from one building to another. And so it happened that the college men all over Henderson were quick to volunteer, and that they formed a great part of the brigade that helped to save other buildings nearby the Hardeman Hardware Company. That was one of the largest buildings, one of the oldest businesses here in Henderson, because the man who operated it was Brother J.G. Hardeman, a cousin of Brother Brody Hardeman, and his daughters and his son, Robert Hardeman, were students in Freed Hardeman College. And thus, there was a tie there. He was one of the first members of the board of directors when Brother Freed was brought back to help Brother Hardeman in the school. And so this family that owned the hardware store were closely allied with Freed Hardeman College. It was soon announced that the building would be rebuilt and that the business would continue. But the Freed Hardeman students had a great part in saving much property nearby in Henderson that night. Many of them drew water from wells till they were practically dry. Others carried it, and others then threw it to stop flames and so on. And I might make mention of the fact that I spent quite some time, 2 hours or more, just north of the courthouse on Crook Avenue, throwing water to try to stop the flames from spreading on top of some of the buildings there. I believe these constitute most of the unique, I might say, happenings. Of course, I could recall many others, and will in other connections. There was usually a spread of disease, contagious diseases, right soon after the Christmas holidays and the first of the new year. Although at the time, the plan was not to have an extended vacation period just a few days usually, many students did return home and contact such diseases as measles and mumps, and smallpox, and I recall also there was a great wave of spinal meningitis that excited the people of Henderson very much at the time, until Brother Frieden Hardeman invited some of our leading physicians at that time and other times to come and talk to the students, because of course if they got too alarmed there would be a great withdrawal for a period at least and return home. And so during the smallpox scares and the spinal meningitis scares so forth, they had leading physicians. Dr. Baird was one of the physicians at that time. Dr. Brown, a famous man in West Tennessee. This Dr. Baird, as I mentioned here, is the father of Dr. Oscar Baird, who continued the medical practice in his family and became one of the famous West Tennesseans, being appointed by the governor to superintend institutions for about 8 years, as I now recall. And so that is the way they handled unique epidemics, in which we had quite a number during the time I was here.
What about the clubs? Were you a member of a club?
Yes. I was a phylumatian. That the leading clubs at that time were the Eupathian, Phylumathian, the Sigma Rho, and just now I do not recall. They were the three principal clubs. At that time, the clubs met on Monday afternoons. This would bring me to give a unique bit of information, that the plan of operating the week here in the early days of the college, which has continued for quite a number of years, was that they had classes on Saturday, complete schedule, and had Monday as the off day. And Monday was used for the various purposes. There were two or three reasons for this. First, the country people had the habit of coming to town on Saturdays, and thus they congested the small village in all areas. And next is the students could attend to much of their business better on Mondays than they could on Saturday. Laundry and various other things of that kind. The ministers, the preachers of the college, also found it to be a wonderful help to them, and was doubtless one of the principal reasons why that was the way the week was arranged, because having to travel by train to get to all appointments, it was very difficult for them to be back earlier than sometime late Sunday night or early Monday morning, on up till noon or afternoon Mondays. And so this gave them the opportunity and some rest from the regular routine. So the college operated, and it was a point of wisdom that it did, to have a Saturday, a regular school day, and to have Monday as the off day. So the clubs met on Monday afternoon. That was one of the number of things that the time was used for. The clubs at that time had such a reputation, since they carried on many activities, later taken over by classes in the college, that the citizens of the city and roundabout often came, because the program usually consisted of the usual features, roll call and reading of minutes by the secretary and other normal functions of that kind. But the two or three particularly unique features was that most of the debating and practically all of the training in public speaking and things of that kind, later having been taken over in classwork in the college, in a speech department, and worked into the English department, much of the English work like spoken English and things of that nature. And so the debating, though, practically in every Monday afternoon, they had a debate in which the speakers used 10 minutes each, four in number, two affirmative speakers and two negative speakers on such subjects as women place or participation in politics and whether the United States should go in the direction of a social organization which was growing at that particular time. Of course, nothing was known about communism, but the basic principles of socialism in general, and many religious topics were discussed, like in a preacher's debating club now. And so we had people who would come, citizens, and enjoy, because that was the only place in Henderson where they could get access to such features as that were put on here by the college men, the college students. And we devoted much time to them. They became great contests, as much, and we had no athletics, I might say, in the way of college-organized groups, teams, anything of that kind. And so we had great contests among leading speakers in societies on opposite sides of the various questions. So those were the clubs, and they remain pretty well. The clubs have been carried on, as you know, traditions up to this day. One, the Eupathians finally dropped down in numbers during a period, and some new ones being organized in later years, to where they ceased to exist as a club. But later on, some students became interested, of which Brother Bob Oliver, his wife, and others that I do not now recall, became interested and thought there was need to revive the old traditional Eupathian, and asked me if I would assist them. Of course, I had to do away with a little bit of my patriotism in the other club, but I was happy to do that, and I'm very proud to say that they did revive it real well. It soon was in good competition with all the other clubs, and I think even right now is one of the outstanding ones on the campus.
Now, what about the entertainment? Did you have any?
Yes, the college had quite a series of entertainment at the time. Brother Hardman was a great speaker himself, and he was acquainted with many of the leading statesmen of the South and other areas, both, of course, in the political area as well as in the church area and educational area. And due to that, he was able to bring a great many able men. So most of the entertainment would be of that, what we might ordinarily call now a Chautauqua type, which later, in a sense, developed. So during the time I was here, I recall hearing some of the greatest political figures and orators and literary people entertaining. The auditorium of the administration building, which seated about 450 at the time, was often filled. Rarely ever had a program put on by the college, such as dramatics or things of that kind, or a great outstanding speaker in the areas that I'm talking about, but that it was filled with students and with citizens of Henderson and nearby areas who came. Such men as Bob and Alf Taylor and Vardaman and men of that type and prominence and figure, William Jennings Bryan, I've heard all those men speak in the chapel hall. And the one that captivated me most that caused me, as I now remember, to become so interested that he so completely kept my mind occupied until when his speech was finished that I hardly knew where I was or what I'd been doing for a while. That was Vardaman from Mississippi. I heard all those great orators and men here in the college, but he was the man who held the attention of the audience, I believe, most enraptured with his oratory and with his great display of historical knowledge and of people and everything, till by that when his ended, it seemed but just about a 5-minute period, and we were just kind of had to get ourselves back together to know where we were. And he's one of a few men that I could even say that about. Of course, all those men were wonderful, and I think very happily over the opportunities given to us. There were great musicians that I'm not so capable of keeping in mind or remembering brought here. Most of the entertainment then was of great artists, performers, and more a Chautauqua type when I was here in college.
Dating plays an important role in the school today. Did they have dating at that time?
No, that causes me to reflect on such a social change of rules and regulations and so forth that the college has experienced, of course, along with society in general and various traditions giving way to later developments and so on. Due to the situation at that time, I think it was pretty universal, with colleges of the independent type or religious connected type, not to allow free dating, and the men and women of the college to be in associations with each other on a familiar ground like has later developed. I'll not try to go into all the details to defend that. They thought they had it well studied. But the expression, the rules were on or the rules were off, came to be one of the common ones known at that day and time. So just a few times each particular unit, quarter, it was not on a quarterly basis time, but a similar period, were the rules taken off so that the young men and young women could date each other. Of course, in the homes, they did not have facilities for that. Therefore, practically all dating had to be done at the college building, in the building. And even in the beginning at that time, we did not have dormitories. That furnished a little bit later, commencing 1921 with the first dormitory, which is now the Hall Rowland Dormitory. And, of course, then they began to allow them to date in that building. But up to that time, it is just a few times during one period of 2 months or more that the rules were taken off and that the young men could go walk with the ladies to the programs here in the college, whatever they were, and then spend some time with each other and so forth. So that was the system of dating, and they spoke of it as the rules off or the rules on. And if during the meantime that they had dated unknown about and so forth, and later the breaking of the rules for dates in the different homes, which was forbidden, then they were not suspended at the time given and granted to students regularly. So that's quite a unique and different social feature then, since no homes had parlors of that nature that they could entertain in a proper way for dating.
Now, what about the place of worship? Where did you worship while you were here in school?
When I came here to be a student, the meeting house was on Crook Avenue and 2nd Street. It was a lot donated by Brother N.B. Hardiman's father, and who also was the father of Brother Lon Hardiman and Sister Pearl who became later Pearl Tarpley and Pearl White in her next marriage. So their father donated the lot for the first meeting house of the Church of Christ in Henderson. It was a frame building and stood there until 1933. It caught fire and burned in 1933 by Brother R.E. Henson. Was in a meeting here. This building had all the classes they had at that time in the one auditorium. Of course, like all other churches, or most other churches at the time, they did not have special class rooms. Therefore, they had to just divide and get far enough apart and speak low tone somewhat to have a number of different classes in the auditorium. It had some of the great preachers of the church here during those years. I got to hear men like Brother J.D. Tant and the Dunns that I had mentioned previously, being connected in great preachers in West Tennessee of the gospel. Brother N.B. Hardiman held a meeting not long after I came here to be in school. Now, this building was erected in 1903, or soon thereafter, the lot was donated, because 1903 was the year that the congregation here separated over the use of mechanical instruments, like the organ, in the worship, and of working through the state Tennessee Missionary Society. They had divided, and part of the eldership continuing with what became known as what was known and continued to be known as the Christian Church, which started here in 1871, and where they had all been worshipped up until 1903. And so then the Hardimans and quite a number of other families divided. Brother Freed, of course, among the number, and began to build another house, establish another congregation, and that's the one that has remained. Meeting on 2nd Street and Crook Avenue, and a part of the old building is still there, the entrance to it in concrete. And after a new building was built here in 1949, then this lot was returned to Sister Pearl Hardiman White to be their property, since it was donated by her father. Then we returned it to the family. In the meantime, between the time the first building where I worshiped and where I attended burnt and the erection of the building which is now on White Street and so on, then the congregation met in the college, in the auditorium of the college, and used it. And of course, it gave wonderful facilities, because we could expand using certain rooms for classrooms. And that became somewhat a problem in the church later. There were some who commenced urging a separate building because of too much college connection, too much college influence. And that later created somewhat a problem in the congregation. Because some wanted to build a small building and get separate and get into it, and others didn't want to do that. And we had, of course, the foundation fund from the insurance of the original building, holding it for a future building. But we met in the college. And since there was no baptistry in the college, then right back on the south side of it now, just a few steps from the walkway there, that goes out to the boys' dormitory, and just a little east of the end of the Hall Rowland dormitory, we dug a pit and fixed it with steps and used it as the baptistry. And so there is the old baptistry, I'm sure, with some of the recognition of it, though it's been covered over between the administration building and the small building at the east end of the Hall Rowland Dormitory. which was originally the coal house, to supply the coal for heating the first dormitory, the Hall Rowland dormitory. So that those were the unique features about the worship. Of course, that was not while I was here in school, but it's while I in the early years of when I was here as a teacher.
Now, how about the town? Did you feel part of the town while you were a student here, or was it pretty much separate?
Well, I did not feel a part of the town, of course, as I did later when I moved here and so on. I felt quite different as a student at that time. I reckon I might express correctly that in general the students did not feel to be an integral part of the activities of Henderson, but of course retaining their membership back in their home congregations and going back to the various places for all the connections of family and business and other things, that they never did come to be a very integral part of the activities of Henderson. I might say that in the beginning that was reflected in such things as some of the clubs, because as often happens, each of the clubs kind of became known in some distinctive features. For instance, first, the Sigma Rho Club became more known as the Preacher's Club at that time. In other words, more of the leaders that were taking a ministerial course and planned to preach and so on at that time became members of the Sigma Rho, and doubtless they featured that in order to get them into it when they came here. The Philomathian Club at the time was Phil Moore. I don't know how I came to be an unique exception. I reckon I have been somewhat in my nature all my life, so as the club of the town of Henderson. In other words, such families as the leading families of Henderson, the Hardiman family, and other families were the girls and boys, the children reared in those who had homes here and were natives of Henderson. More of them were in the Philomathian Club than any of the others, and it kind of got that unique distinction. And then the Eupathian Club, in its, of course, not having these two particular features, gave its attention more than to all the other students who did come in and had more of that type, cosmopolitan, I might say, in it. And so that was some distinctive things about the clubs at that time. For that reason, then, on account of the way those things developed, most of us students did not feel to have a very integral connection with the operation of Henderson, and because the businesses were carried on, and we only knew some of those that we dealt with some, and that was not so very much. And the church work here in Henderson was about the only unique feature outside the college.
Would you describe your graduation and tell what Fried Hardeman College meant to you at the time of your graduation?
The date of my graduation from Fried Hardeman College was 1913. As formally said, I first entered in 1910 and returned in 1911, but was hindered both those sessions about mid-session due to a wave of diseases of a contagious nature that I was unable to return after a period of weeks, and so returned in the fall of 1912 to continue throughout that entire year, and was able to continue to the end of the session and be in the class that usually graduated about the 1st of June each year. It was a small group, since there were two basic groups that were graduated each year. One was of the general education type in which it, languages and some science, history, and other subjects were included, and was called a scientific course. A degree was given at the end of that course. A BS degree was the one awarded, usually, if students took some science courses. The other group was a special teachers group, those who had chosen teaching as a profession. And there was a class of approximately 15 graduated with the intention of teaching. At the time, I had not definitely decided what I might do next, but I did continue to teach, even though I did not take a special teacher's course while in Fried-Hardeman. The class of five, each one delivered a graduating oration. That was one of the conditions of graduation at the time. The entire day, a morning session, was devoted to that, and usually a speaker was on the program. At the present time, I'm unable to recall the name of the one who delivered the address, but usually the addresses were rather short because the class occupied about 50 minutes of the time in delivering their orations. After which, it was a custom at that time that friends of the graduates or the family of the graduates presented a bouquet by bringing it and placing it at the feet of the graduates. The graduates delivered their orations from the stage in the old administration building, the one in which we are now, and these bouquets were placed toward the front of the stage there at the feet of the graduates. After graduation, the next decision which I made was to enter the field of teaching, and I began to make preparations for that. But at this particular point, I would like to summarize my general feelings and attitude toward the time I'd spent in Fried-Hardeman. I was very happy with it because I found here a family-like atmosphere that was very wonderful for me, since I was only 17 years old when I left home to enter college. And the special attention that was given by each faculty member and interest manifested was a great encouragement to me in competition with many others who were considerably older and had more experiences in life than I'd had up to that particular date. So that feature was one of the prevalent ones, although there was not as much student association due to the rules at the time as we have at present, but enough that many very wonderful lifetime friendships were formed during the time, and we were happy under the circumstances to have made the many good Christian friends, since we had come, most of us, from small communities where the church was quite small and where the opportunities that we had here in Henderson were not available. When I began to attend church in Henderson, I heard Brother N.B. Hardeman in a series of meetings, and Brother J.D. Tant, and quite a number of others of our ablest preachers in the environment of a college student body, which made a much deeper impression upon me than the work in church had made back in my home community. At the time, Fried-Hardeman College was an independent school. That is, it didn't have any membership in any kind of an association, and the grades issued to the students were not recorded and kept as they later are. The graduation did not give us the benefits and privileges at that time that later accrued to students when Freed Hardeman entered an association of colleges, and the first one that it entered was in 1925 when it became a member of the Tennessee College Association, and thereafter students were accepted somewhat conditionally when they graduated from Freed Hardeman College on the basis of their transcript. Those who had taken teachers' courses were also accepted thereafter on transcript from school and given a certificate by the state that they might teach without having to take an examination. Up until that time, it had been the custom that all students graduated from such independent institutions had to take a state examination to be issued a certificate to teach. So a new benefit accrued to the graduates, although the grades were not recorded at that particular time as they are today. And later on, it became the work of many of us in the institution to accumulate data from the students and from the faculty in order to set up a system of records. And the state then honored the previous work done in Freed Hardeman College. This independent nature of the school at the time had its benefits, of course, in that it caused the teachers to want the students to do a very thorough grade of work that they could stand up under the examinations necessary to enter other colleges or to fill some position of teaching or whatever they might choose to do. So my stay in Freed Hardeman College in Henson is a high point of my life and preparation and the foundation for the future of it.
Did you keep your records yourself of your own?
Yes.
Courses?
Yes.
Could you tell us what?
When the student graduated, he was given a complete record signed by the faculty of that date, showing the courses he took and the grade written in percentage at the time that he had made on the different courses. Later, I needed a copy of that official and wrote Brother A.G. Freed, who continued to be president for some years after I graduated in 1913, and he very graciously accumulated another official copy and sent me a copy of my record according to the data he obtained and the faculty, many of whom were still working in the school. And I have kept that copy of my grades under the present time.
That's wonderful.
Cherish it.
So now you have graduated and you're ready to start your life's work, right?
That is correct. That is right. So I began to study, and knowing that I was going to have to take an examination, I began preparation for the immediate following months to be able to teach in a state high school. I really had not thought of going into some high school, but rather some elementary school at the end of my course here in Freed Hardeman College. But a good opening came over at Sardis, Tennessee, in an adjoining county, and I was elected. So after being elected to become the principal of that school, which was what we know today as a junior high school, having 9th and 10th grades at the time, then it was necessary for me to take an examination. The state arranged those examinations for high school teachers in this area at Jackson, Tennessee. So at the end of about a period of about 30 or 45 days,